Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. Breaking news, Kevin, the Suns have traded Jay Crowder.
Oh, we're done. We're done. That's all. That's the big, yeah.
The moment has come. The latest we have ever recorded an episode, we recorded one less than 12 hours ago, but here we are at 1:54 a.m. Kevin slept through the big news like I'm sure a whole lot of you did. It came down. It looks like Woj's tweet came in at 11:05 p.m. local time that the Suns were nearing a blockbuster trade to acquire Brooklyn Nets star Kevin Durant. If this is the way you're finding out the news, whoa, boy, I'm sure you've settled in a bit and are probably by now more caught up than we are, because as you can imagine, something like this really goes through the ringer of not only emotions, but just kind of digesting it. And we are still in the process of it. I've been more fortunate than Kevin. Kevin woke up 20 minutes ago and just said, screw it, I'll come on the pod and see how we do. I've had about 3 hours to digest it, and I'm still in the process of doing that. I've written 1.5 columns already, and I'm still in the process of doing that. So keep in mind here, we are going to keep it as bare bones as possible. And then I think tomorrow, once we get some more sleep, once we have a lot more time to analyze this, we'll get more into like concrete opinions and thoughts. But the deal, the Suns are trading Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, Jay Crowder, 4 unprotected first round picks in 2023, 25, 27, and 29, and then a 2028 pick swap. Suns also get TJ Warren. Welcome back, Tony Buckets, Kevin. That is a low key big part of this trade that I think we'll more talk about tomorrow, because instantly, of course, the Suns, their depth is in trouble. But they bring in Kevin Durant. I wrote a column that you can read on ArizonaSports.com that essentially highlighted how this is a gamble, Kevin. There's no way to look at it but a huge risk and a huge gamble. It's not like the Chris Paul trade. It's nothing like that. But in my opinion, it is worth the gamble. It is worth the risk, and it is worth the steep price. How do you feel about what they gave up? Let's start there. Too much, too little, about right? Where are you at?
I think it's about right. It is interesting considering we're 14 hours off of Matt Ishbia being introduced as owner and saying he wants to be looking at a sustainable future, because by money standards, he answered that question of yours, by the way. Money standards, they're going to pay a lot, and might be hard to get off some of these deals. And picks-wise, it's pretty much everything. So, like, how are you going to hit the hard reset ever, or even a minor reset? I don't know. But for right now, I mean, you can't argue that. I think it makes you a completely different team. And like we've talked about, like since the finals run, I think they needed a shakeup in some way. This is it. I will say, am I not woke anymore? Cause I literally didn't wake up through like everyone buzzing on the phone. Like I sleep next to my phone. And that's what I'm bothered about right now. Sorry.
You're still rattled by it. I was going to do the same thing. I was going to have my phone on full, like not even on vibrate, on full volume. And just if like 9 tweets went off in a row, like this kind of thing, that I would wake up. But fortunately, I was awake. I was frustrated by getting notifications for Jakob Poeltl trades and odds shifting. And big 3 notifications. And then all of a sudden, it's the biggest trade in Suns history. I mean, we're going to have to ask Vince and Dave Burns and the historians of Arizona sports trades in history, but this might be the biggest trade in Valley history. I think simply this boils down to, Kevin, the only way that this trade is a success is if the Suns win a championship. That's all that this is about. It's very interesting how it sort of developed. Woj went on, sports analyst Scott Van Pelt said the Suns and Nets talked a lot yesterday. They talked more today. The Suns did not want to include Mikal Bridges, which makes a whole lot of sense for reasons we will briefly touch on tonight, but more so get into tomorrow on why getting rid of Mikal Bridges is a problem. And that's something we've talked about a lot in the past. Like Josh Okogie might start, Kevin, because they need someone to defend Ja Morant and Jamal Murray and CJ McCollum and guys like that. So we'll get to that more later, of course. Woj went on to say with Scott Van Pelt that the Suns were looking at other trade options as well, but ultimately they got this done. Some of the other reporting just crediting Matt Ishbia to really having his foot down and really forcing this thing to get done and playing a role in the kind of streamlining this and getting it done tonight and just getting this all taken care of. If you are someone, and again, we like to play this game, Kevin, where we like to address both sides. If you are someone who does not like this trade, I understand. I've had a couple of friends text me already and say that they're just really sad and just don't like the trade. They understand how good Kevin Durant is as a basketball player. But I'm writing a column right now that should be ready in the morning if I'm insane enough and still awake as I feel right now, on how Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson were the heart and soul of this team. I already wrote the piece about the twins that is about how they are the heart and soul of the team, and the heart and soul of their team is gone. And that's going to affect their locker room for sure. Not to like a negative detriment by any means, but it is going to be an adjustment to not have those two guys around, specifically Mikal. But I know a lot of fans are just like, we shouldn't have given up Mikal. Like we should. Why would we give up Mikal? And I understand fans feeling that way. But at the same time, this to me feels like Chris Paul and DeAndre Hopkins again, Kevin. And I think we're starting to learn that that's a thing now. Whenever a local team acquires a national star, superstar who plays at like an all-pro level, I think you need to watch him on a day-to-day basis to truly understand his greatness. That's kind of what I said when they traded for Chris Paul, that if you were opposed to this trade, you just don't know how good Chris Paul is. And even I myself, like 3 weeks into watching him every day, was like, oh my gosh, he's even better than I thought. And one graph in my story, Kevin, is highlighting how excellent of a defensive player Kevin Durant is. And I'm sure there are a fair few people listening. They're like, really? Kevin Durant's like an awesome defensive player? Yes, he is. Really, really good on defense. And he is now, is he going to be that guy who guards the other people? No. But what I'm saying is he is about as well-rounded of a bat. He's known as a scorer, rightfully so, but he is as well-rounded of a player that I've seen in my time just watching basketball as a fan. Just how completely well-rounded his game is, how much his playmaking and defense have improved in the last 5 to 6 to 7 years specifically. How he has adapted his game to every single new team that he has been on. Yes, he is the guy who keeps moving to super teams and all that stuff, but the adaptability required to do that is rather insane and is something that I didn't really touch on in this piece. If you go to the site, you'll read the story and see all the statistical anomalies that he is essentially. Did you watch Mobile Suit Gundam as a kid, Kevin? You remember that at all?
I do not.
Okay, I tried. I really tried my best. Think like Transformers, basically, but they have like swords. It's tight. It's super tight. I called him like a human, a basketball Gundam, basically. Like just with what he is as a basketball player and his size, how he handles the ball. If you haven't seen much of Kevin Durant play for whatever reason, which is fair if you're just a Suns fan, he is a marvel. You've never seen anything like him before, and we're probably never going to see anything like him again. Yes, we're in the Victor Wembanyama Greek freak, like all these unicorns coming in, but we're never going to see a player like him. And now he plays for the Phoenix Suns. He's shooting, the one statistical crazy number that I'll throw out there is he's shooting 56% from the field this year. He is a perimeter player. He primarily takes jump shots. He's shooting 56% right now, Kevin. His true shooting percentage is 67.3%. If that holds, it will rank number one amongst all of the seasons in league history where guys have averaged 28 points or more in a game. The number one spot on that list currently for a full season is Steph Curry's 2015-16 unanimous MVP year. He is an amazing basketball player, and I will go as far as to say, and I wrote it in here, that he's mastered basketball. I can't say that about more than like three or four guys, really, or really, I don't even think I need to get to three or four in terms of like it's him, LeBron, and I'm not sure who else I'm willing to include in that for my time. Keep in mind, I am 32 years old and I started seriously, really seriously watching basketball 10, 15 years ago. So don't be mad if I didn't mention Michael Jordan or anything like that. But him and LeBron are the two that come to mind for me with their, do you feel fair in calling it a mastery? That's what I feel when I watch them.
I mean, if you want to include Chris Paul,
yeah,
I'm trying to think. Yeah. I mean, he's not flawed other than like his age, the injury history, maybe expecting that he falls off just because he's played so much basketball and he's just, I don't know, to me, he carries in casual, even non-casual NBA fan circles, like people have opinions about him, but my opinion about him always kind of goes back to like 2011 lockout, and he was like the one guy who was like, you know what, screw this, I don't have a contract, I need to just play basketball. And he was just going, running up and down like all these tournaments that happen, just street ball tournaments, and he would just show up. And I just remember like following that and being like, why doesn't other people do this? And it's just, he loves basketball. And so I think that's always been my opinion of him, like just wants to hoop. And when you consider he goes and plays now with Chris Paul and Devin Booker, I think, like, yes, they lost their heart and soul, but that's kind of their identity still, right? Like, it's these guys who have been through it, who've gone deep in the playoffs, who just love basketball. And I think that even when you have these different stars, I think those stars, specifically those three dudes, can fit together because of that, right? So
yeah,
that's why I when you look at superstar trades, like we were joking like what, two podcasts ago about Kyrie and Luka, and they're like, yeah, that, I don't know how that's gonna work like in even next season. But this one, like I'm not worried about the personalities, and I think that's why it's a huge win in that regard. Like yeah, you're taking a risk, you're ecosystem of the team has changed as far as roles, but as far as like making sense, it makes sense to me.
If you're hesitant there, that's a good thing to bring up. Monty Williams has a working relationship with Kevin Durant that dates back to OKC, I believe, but they work together with Team USA stuff a bit. Obviously, Devin Booker and Kevin Durant were just teammates on Team USA. That probably helped further build their friendship. And Durant, I mean, you go back like 7 years ago, he was on Bill Simmons' podcast and was asked like, who's like the up and comer you're looking for? And he brought up Booker. Like he's had his eye on Booker a really long time. The Chris Paul, that goes without saying, they've won gold medals together as well. I'm glad you brought up the precedent though for him as a winner, because I originally didn't have that in the piece at first. And then I kind of realized like, I do need to include the fact that this is a guy who is a 2-time NBA champion. Both times he did that, he was the finals MVP. That first one, Kevin, they beat the Cavaliers 4-1, and that's a series you look at and you say 4-1, ho-hum, whatever, you know, all that kind of stuff. He just outplayed LeBron James when LeBron James was at the peak of his powers. It was one of the most impressive things that I've ever seen from a basketball player before, because it was LeBron's world at that point. Yes, he wasn't winning every single championship, but when it came to that time in those kinds of series, for Durant to rise to the occasion the way that he did in that moment, with all of the chatter around him, with everything surrounding him from a narrative standpoint, and just from his role on that team where he was deferring to Steph and Klay a lot during that season. He really was. And then once it got to like the finals, it's me and LeBron. Like, I got this, guys. Like, what? This has been cool. It's been great. We're playing fun team basketball. I'm going to just outplay the best player in the world, and perhaps, in my opinion, at least, the best player of all time. Like, I'm just going to do that in the biggest stage. And then they sweep them the next year. That's another finals MVP for Durant. And listeners, longtime listeners who will maybe remember me saying something to this effect when we were talking about Booker on Team USA, in my opinion, the best basketball player I've ever seen, Kevin. I just call that LeBron, but I think Team USA Kevin Durant has an appeal as well. Like, he's in the argument. I know we're talking about like NBA specifically, but I wrote it here that he happens to be the best player in the history of Team USA men's basketball and has 3 Olympic gold medals. I'm not sure what his statistics are exactly, but like the final form of his powers that he would reach in international basketball, for whatever reason, it clicked for him to another level. And I just keep going on long-winded here because it's really, there's greatness with him in the same way we talked about the LeBron thing and saw how LeBron stepped up to that occasion. Like Kevin Durant has that same level of greatness to him. He really does. And that's, again, he is 34 and I would argue that he's in his prime. Like, is LeBron in his prime right now at 38? No, but you look at what he's doing at 38. And it's like, look at what Kevin Durant is doing at 34. It's worth it, man. Do you want to get to what they give up, what they gave up?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you want to just hold on that, the only reason would be if there are more trades. But I think we can dive into it now. And I mean, it's really what they didn't give up, because I've always thought, like, we knew that the Nets didn't want DeAndre Ayton last summer when this was a thing. Like, he's a big part to keep in this to me. And people can argue about that, and I can admit that he's going to have to prove a lot of things again. But, like, they have a lot of weapons on this team. And when you give up, we can talk about what they gave up and the holes there, but I just wanted to say that we don't have to talk about the lack of ball handling anymore, I guess. And they have a big two, and that's just gives them more diversity in what they can do offensively. And I think offensively is where you start on this, and then we can get into the holes on defense. But I think my only quibble on like the giving up is maybe the amount of picks and the swap, but again, it's not surprising you have to do that to get Kevin Durant.
Yeah, so I believe Kevin right now they've still got some swaps that they could give up. This isn't, I have not gotten this confirmed yet in terms of the assets that they have left. Obviously, that was their maximum threshold of picks right now. To be clear, in situations like this, when teams give up their full allotment of picks, it gets lost that like they're still going to have their first round picks in 24, 26, 28, like, and so on. Now, are they going to be able to trade them? Like, not yet, but for most of them, at least not yet. But with that in mind, they still have them. So it's not like they are completely lost on draft picks. And now there's even more of a, in these kinds of situations, when teams do this, it puts even more pressure on them to nail those draft picks. You remember, Kevin, when we were doing these thought exercises when the Suns were eliminated and talking about like, oh, when you draft Kevon Looney at the end of the first round and it works out and he's still there a decade later, like, yeah, that's pretty important for the tax team. That's pretty good thing to do. Like Jordan Poole, like the same kind of thing. Like, it's, I know he's been a more mixed bag this year. I think that's a good place to look at is in terms of what trade assets do they still have? Because I don't think that they're done yet for sure in terms of seeking out trades, but it's just a matter of what they can pull off. They have Dario Saric is expiring. They have Landry Shamet. And then again, to go to those swaps again, I think that's where they are. We should not graze past, though, again, how they're missing Bridges and Johnson. Again, my story is going to do a much better job of this in the morning, because I'm really trying to cover the emotional hold that Cam and Mikal have on the team and the fan base, and just how loved they were by the fans and how loved they were by the teammates and just people in the building, and everything. And that is going to be a part of this. It reminds me of the Kelly Oubre thing a bit, but it's so much more different in so many different ways. Like, you think about just all the stuff Mikal has done, Cam's lemonade stand, like, all this different stuff comes to mind with those guys. And it's funny because the glowing personalities that those two guys bring, Kevin, we kind of shift from that. And not to say like now that this is business, it's now championship or bust, but it is now championship or bust, and it is serious season. And not to say you couldn't win a championship with Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson because they were goofing around. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I think the overall personality and DNA of this team is just now naturally going to change a bit. It's not going to be as lighthearted anymore. And that was something where you and I would talk about this team and everyone, the way that I am going to remember, and this is sad for me to say because I really enjoyed covering these guys, the way that I will remember that era of the Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, like Jay Crowder, that two years is just how fun they were to be around and how much they I can say confidently, like they all really enjoyed being around each other and being friends and how tight they were. And it's just going to be a different vibe now. I'm not going to say it's better or worse. I think that's foolish to make any sort of reckless claims like that. But it's just going to be different, Kevin. It's going to be different without those guys. But we're just talking off the court here, to be clear. That's it so far.
I mean, I'm thinking of the one time, like the one indiscretion on Mikal Bridges' career here was he and DA were doing the dance pregame and Monty clearly didn't like it. And it kind of got pushed aside. But like, I don't know if that's right or wrong, but I think the biggest person that impacts is honestly DA. I think DA might have fewer like dudes his age, dudes who are, you know, fun loving like him. And that's going to be super interesting because it's just going to be a pressure cooker, like, right? Because the expectations are going to be there. But I think Chris and Devin and now KD are just going to be always trying to win. And that might be good for DA. Just to be around that and only guys like that. Or he might miss it and he might, you know, I don't know how he's going to react to all of his teammates being like that. And that's going to be really interesting to, again, your point about the DNA of this team changing and kind of, I guess, the personality of the team changing where, like, we might get reports like a few weeks in where there's like disagreements about something and stuff like that. And it's going to get overblown and the media is going to be hovering over this place now a lot more. So I think that's a really interesting point just to bring up, because I think KD is, again, like Devin and like Chris were just super serious about ball. Like they love basketball, but it's going to be a different tone, I think, when you really walk into practice every day and all that stuff.
This is a lot to absorb, Kevin. I'm just going to say it out loud. Woj just dropped his story. It includes a lot of updated details. He wrote that talks had progressed and stalled, and the Suns appeared to be pivoting toward a three-way deal that might have landed them Atlanta's John Collins, Kevin, sometime Thursday morning. On the direction of his new owner, Matt Ishbia, general manager James Jones texted Nets GM Sean Marks sometime after 11 p.m. Eastern, and it wouldn't be long until Ishbia and Nets owner Joe Tsai had cobbled together the final elements of a historic trade. The story goes on to say Durant and his business manager Rich Kleiman told Tsai and Marks that their preference was a deal to Phoenix, sources said. It doesn't really – the story in here doesn't necessarily – I haven't seen anything here that suggested like Durant was asking for a trade, but it does say Irving was traded to the Mavericks on Sunday, and that started the final days and hours of Durant and net as a net. So it goes without saying, I think, from the way I'm interpreting this. Now, this is where the juicy details of trade talks come in, Kevin, to further read from the story here, again, from Woj. The initial hope was to keep Bridges out of the trade, but that was a non-starter with the Nets. The Suns' offers weren't close to the Nets' asking price on Monday and Tuesday, and Marks kept working on possible trades to bolster the roster around Durant. The Nets pursued OG and Anobi, discussed possible deals for Collins and Caris LeVert, but Durant's mood was unsettled, and Brooklyn knew it had to push on Phoenix to make the kind of offer it couldn't refuse. The Suns have been talking with Detroit about the possibility of acquiring Collins in a three-way deal with Atlanta, but Ishbia wouldn't call it a night without making one more run at Durant. There's that energy, Kev. That TED Talk energy paying off.
We were wasting his time today, really.
Turns out that guy was up to important stuff. Once the Suns were willing to move Dario Saric's contract out of the deal and spare themselves surrendering second-round picks to account for his salary, the teams were on the cusp of a deal.
Ooh, that's a lot to take in.
I don't really think we have to react to it much, but I think we'll just keep it short and some surmise, Kevin, by saying that's how the NBA works. You're talking about trading for Kevin Durant, and then 12 hours later, it's John Collins. You know, that's how fast things move and how quick things kind of go. And like all of the Suns Twitter, people who are still awake right now are doing the, like, Lisa's just tweeted, oh my God, it was almost John Collins instead of Durant, which is like, that's the league. That's how this works. It's crazy.
I want to point out, Woj had been dropping the Suns' summer interest over the last couple days. And obviously he had been doing a lot of reporting on this leading into it. Very interesting to kind of learn a couple things. One, he was trying really hard not to leak stuff and leak that there was anything involved right now. And Kevin Durant's trait, like, we have pre-written stories, and I wrote a thing about Kevin Durant maybe just asking for a trade, which we never heard about until just this happened. So it's kind of interesting because we talk about this team doesn't leak stuff, right? And they were trying really hard for stuff not to get out, it seems. And even though there are all these other teams involved in these deals and talks and that Woj is now writing about, like, I think that's interesting. But the other piece out of this, Ishbia is involved. Like, is James Jones just being told what to do? It looks, I mean, he literally wrote on the direction of Ishbia. He was told to text John Marks. So, but like that's what's weird about this, right? Cause like, I'm sure James Jones could say like, yeah, this is just how I operate now. Like, my owner's more aggressive, wants me to go at it. And I'll say, yeah, here's a more risky trade, but I think it's a fair deal. He can say that. And, but it's all connected to your owner and how they want to operate too.
Guessing here, Kevin, again, to people listening, I'm not reporting anything. Don't have any, this is just simply inclinations. My guessing based on everything I know about the team and following them, I'm going to guess James Jones was never going to include Mikal ever. He was never going to do it.
Here's the thing though on that. Like, weren't there, I don't know if there are reports or people linking like maybe Jaylen Brown for Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Like, it's really surprising that, I guess it's not surprising because I think his contract length and like injury history and worries maybe limit what the Nets could have gotten. But everyone was like, oh, you got to get a full-blown all-star back for Kevin Durant, right? Because of all the reasons you said, he's a great player. Not that Mikal's not an awesome player, but he's not an all-star. Is he an all-star this year? No. Devin Booker's not even an all-star this year. So I think that's an interesting part of this, is that didn't happen, and Brooklyn definitely went after picks, and they got two really good players too. Don't get me wrong, but I guess I haven't even said anything about Cam Johnson, but I think it kind of looked like he was the main trade chip after Mikal.
I stand by. I'm assuming that, like, he was done here, you know? I know it's Kevin Durant, but I stand by what I said last episode, where if Cam Johnson or Chris Paul are traded, that means they weren't on the team next year. And I stand by that. And it's unfortunate. I'm very glad they're together, and I hope they stay together. I hope Brooklyn does the smart thing and pays Cam Johnson a lot of money. And then, hey, it's really hard finding a star and a second star, Kevin. That's the tough part. It's not nearly as tough as finding Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson, but it's still pretty tough to find Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson. So yeah. Brooklyn can just kind of assimilate. Maybe Cam Thomas is one of those stars, Kevin. Maybe it's Cam Thomas. Who knows?
Hey, that's already, like, you're listing off like some dudes who have really elite level NBA skills, and that's a good starting point for them. Like, I know Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, you're never going to get what you really should, just because both those situations completely different. But I don't know. Like, they're going to be an interesting team. You get the right coach, like the Utah Jazz this year. Yeah.
Light thought exercise here. Yeah. And we'll get to more league wide. And again, reacting to that more from Brooklyn's side, looking at Mikal and Cam going forward and Jay. Here's where the Suns stand right now. Thankfully the folks at NBC Sports Edge is like not a site I use, but they update their depth charts like instantaneously. And it's an amazing tool. I always shout out on the pod every time we use them. Chris Paul's going to start a point guard, Kev. You got that guy. You got the best two guard on the planet, Devin Booker, that guy. You're starting small forward. I'm going to leave that blank. Your starting power forward is Kevin Durant. and your starting center is DeAndre Ayton. Your first guard off the bench is Cam Payne when he gets back. I will say, since we've podcasted a couple of times, he's on his feet. He's starting to do on-court work, it looks like. Now, I'm assuming it's non-contact and he's still a ways away, but he's at least back on the court. Let's just leave the wing department empty. And then in the big rotation, you've got Biombo, Landale, and Saric still behind DeAndre Ayton. So I think the question here, Kevin, becomes who starts? And it's a really interesting question because you've got a couple of candidates, in my opinion. And then it also comes down to who comes off the bench. I think that one thing I immediately look at here is Mikal and Cam. Defense, yes, everyone's mind is going to go to defense, but I actually think of shooting here, Kevin, because you're going to stagger these three stars a lot, and you are going to need shooting around them. Hey, Kevin, do you want me to make everyone mad?
Yeah.
Landry Shamet's going to play a lot, I think. I think he's going to be out there. I think we're going to see him. Should Damian Lee be playing more minutes than him? Yeah, but I don't know if that's going to happen. I think we're going to see quite a bit of Landry Shamet for that reason. Man, where do you go with this other spot? Like, just like instantaneous, we'll have a lot more time to think about it and hear other opinions and stuff, but just your fresh thought. Is it Torrey Craig? Do you go outside of the box and go Josh Okogie just for point of attack on guards? Do you go with Damian Lee for just shooting? He would be the weak link defensively, and then I don't even know what you would do defensively with Damian Lee starting. You going to throw Ish in there? Dario? Do you go big with Dario?
So, one, we haven't mentioned Kevin Durant has an MCL sprain he's recovering from. Not expected back till past the All-Star break, I believe. But when he's back, my brain at 1:30 just slotted Josh Okogie in there. And I think that's because what you said, point of attack. And if you are going to have a guy who can't shoot the ball, I would hide him with Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant. And maybe it's a little gunked up because of Ayton, but I think if I'm guessing, that would be a good move just because of doing a similar thing to what they had before, right? Like, he's taking number one option every time now. And you hope they have seen enough in practice and all that stuff to believe in him. But, man, after him, the defense really just kind of falls off a cliff when you look at, like, who's a like super above average defensive player.
Yeah. It's just a really polarizing roster. It is the best team in the West because it has Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton on it. But it just gets polarizing after that in a hurry because, again, I'm going to go back to like my belief that James Jones never wanted to give up Mikal Bridges. This is why, because from a roster construction standpoint, it's just a flawed roster. There's no way to avoid it being flawed in some ways, because we literally have never seen what the Suns look like without Mikal Bridges. We haven't seen it because he played in every single game. And that's another crazy thing, Kevin. They play tomorrow against the Hawks, and that's going to be the first time we see them without Mikal Bridges ever. And we're going to see, like, who is guarding Trae Young? Like, we don't know. I have no idea.
And DeJounte Murray, like, it's going to be on Chris Paul, and Chris Paul was already in a bad spot against that team specifically with Mikal Bridges. So, yeah,
Can I break your brain?
Yeah, please do. It's not broken at all right now.
Get the equivalent of what you need, like what if you look at this roster and you say, this is what I need, the two things that I need, like the two players that I need specifically, whether it's like just two wings that can shoot and defend, whatever, like a worse versions of Bridges and Johnson. If you get offered them for DeAndre, do you take it before tomorrow?
Oh.
If you get the Dorian Finney-Smith, Spencer Dinwiddie equivalent offer for DeAndre Ayton, do you take it?
Yeah, they're not going to, though.
Yeah, and I don't know if another team would. It's I'm just looking at how they changed this roster in enough time, and I don't know how else they do it.
I mean, I'm trying to think of a reasonable, you get two pretty good role players for DeAndre Ayton, but why would a team do that? I guess, like, Indiana's one where, like, if he could be traded there, it makes sense, and you get some guard help, maybe. They have some pieces. I'm trying to break my brain on Toronto right now.
I think
is Gary Trent like an upgrade? If Gary Trent's the main return piece for DeAndre Ayton, I don't know.
I think it's they traded for Jakob Poeltl earlier tonight while you were sleeping, by the way, so they're not going to want Ayton anymore. Yeah,
this is where that's fine.
Well, this is going to be the same for me when I wake up at like 11:30 or whatever tomorrow, and I sleep through like most of the trades after I stay up till however late it's going to be here.
I was trying to be responsible. It backfired. Anyway, continue.
I'm going
to
be irresponsible because I'm a renegade. I'm cool. So this is my early thought: Paul Booker, Craig, Durant, Ayton, Payne, Shamet, Warren. You got to have size on the wing, TJ. I don't know if TJ is a Monty guy. We're going to learn quickly. And then whoever plays center. And I think that's going to be it. I would like to think that Lee would play over TJ Warren, that being Damian Lee. But you're looking at if Shamet and Payne are both playing and Lee is playing, that's a pretty small trio right there. And you need some size. Like Sam Cooper jokingly tweeted, TJ Warren, you are a primary defender now. And I replied to him and said, Torrey Craig, you are guarding Ja Morant now. It's like, just like, they got to figure something out. The Okogie stuff against the really good teams lately has scared me with his, how much they play off of him. I honestly think, the TJ, the other wing spot, so there's the two guards off the bench, Payne and Shamet, the big. I think the other wing might be Ish right now, honestly, with how he's played, with where Monty's been playing him. He was the guy closing games lately. I think it might be Ish for the time being if they feel out TJ. Maybe it's TJ and Dario in like in a package to get a trade. I don't know. I don't even know how to assess like what they could trade for anymore. But they're in the same spot that a lot of other teams have been in that have made trades, which is they got to get some more stuff done, if possible.
Yeah,
but they got the big one done. They got Kevin Durant done.
I'm trying to figure out in my brain, but I don't think it's worth it at this hour.
Nah, let's do it tomorrow, buddy. We're going to podcast again here in... We're going to do three podcasts in under 24 hours. I think we're going to do it. What did we say? 219? Or the other one, I think, is what I said. 212? Something like that? 214? We're going to do it. All right, everyone. That's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for listening to this one. If we appreciate it, because the odds are you saw all three of these, and you're probably going to listen to the trade deadline one, and that's it. The trade deadline review, and that's it. But if you're listening, we really do appreciate it. Go to arizonasports.com. Like I said, I'll have the column there. And I'm probably going to be nuts and just finish the Twins one tonight because I got the ideas in my head, and they might not be there when I wake up, and that scares me sometimes.
Can I ask you one question before we go?
Yeah.
So your very last line in the story that you wrote, I'll just read going into that. It's not all going to be worth it unless the Suns hang their first championship banner. It is the biggest trade of the organization has ever executed. So by default, it's their biggest gamble too. You feel lucky. And immediately my tired brain went to the Gila River Casinos guy asking me that. Was that the intention there?
No, it was just to tie back the gambling thing. You feel lucky. I should have done punk, but you know, whatever.
The song with the horns and what is it? Is it Pitbull? Just went in my head. So just to know where I'm at reading.
Okay,
your stuff.
Go back to sleep, Kevin. You're a father, for goodness sake. All right, everyone. We'll be back in 12 hours. See ya.